my God, why have you forsaken me? Someone in the depths of despair, it's a raw human prayer. Where is God in our greatest need? The one who prays is met with silence. He has put his full trust in God and yet feels abandoned. His forefathers prayed to God and were delivered, but he is forsaken. God has known him since he was in his mother's womb, and yet silence. He is no more than a worm beneath God's notice, scorned and despised, invisible. Trouble is near and there is none to help. He feels alone. So the story begins here. Jesus knew this psalm, these words, this agony. He carried it with him through his own story. He enters the garden, a haven of safety, a place he came to often, a place he loved. And he entered knowing that everything had changed. He is surprised by nothing, not Judas's betrayal, Peter's denials, or the arrival of the soldiers. Not surprised, yet he still feels all of it. His first instinct is to protect the disciples, even here, even now, loving them to the end. When Peter raises his sword and slices off the ear of Malachi, Jesus tells him quietly to put it away. This isn't Peter's battle. This is not his. It is Jesus's alone. Am I not to drink the cup the Father has given me? His alone to carry, his and God's. Jesus has prayed this psalm. He knows where it goes, the forsakenness, the silence, the worm, the scorn. He has taken all of it into his body, like water from that cup. Not refusing what has been given him, what has been asked of him, he goes still. Around him, everything is motion and noise, soldiers with hissing torches and clanking weapons, Peter lunging with a sword, Judas stepping forward from the crowd, the whole machinery of empire and religion spinning into chaos. And Jesus, still, watching, knowing, taking all of it in. Peter denies him, once warming himself by the fire, then again, then a third time. The one who swore he would follow anywhere, fading into the crowd, and Jesus stands still. He's brought before the high priest and questioned. He answers plainly, honestly, without defensiveness or anger. A guard strikes him across the face, a hand across the face, skin against skin, and he doesn't flinch. He asks only, if I have spoken wrongly, tell me where I was wrong. If rightly, why do you strike me? He knows who he is. Even here, especially here. He is brought before Pilate. Are you the king of the Jews? Pilate asks. And you can sense him reaching for a way to define Jesus that makes sense. But Jesus won't fit the category, any category. My kingdom is not from this world. Pilate finds no case against him, but looking for a way out, hands him over anyway. Let him be their problem. The psalm tells us trouble is near, and there is no one to help. He is alone. Pilate has him flogged, then dresses him in purple, the color of kings, and presses a crown of thorns onto his head. The psalm tells us, a joke, all who see me laugh me to scorn. Cruelty, humiliation. Pilate brings him out to the crowd. Here is your king. The crowd won't claim him. To claim him would be to give him power to put them at risk. Better to crucify him as a common criminal. Jesus walks on, carrying his cross to the place of the skull. They nail him between two other men, one on either side, a sign nailed to the cross, Jesus of Nazareth, King of the Jews. The soldiers take his clothes and divide them, casting lots for his seamless tunic, no sense tearing, a good garment. They have no idea they're fulfilling an ancient prayer. The psalmist tells us, they divide my clothes among themselves, and for my clothing they cast lots. Words prayed centuries before are now unfolding on this hill, this exact scene, these soldiers. He's stripped bare, lifted up. The psalmist tells us, I am poured out like water. All my bones are out of joint. My heart within my breast is melting wax. As the soldiers gamble for the cloth that covered him, those who know and love him draw closer. His mother, she's there. She hasn't left. Whatever it cost her to come to this hill, whatever it costs her to stand here and watch, she stays. John doesn't ever give her a name. She's only ever the mother of Jesus. She is every mother who has ever stood at the foot of something unbearable and refused to look away, refused to look away from her child. Mary Magdalene is there too, his truest disciple, the one who kept showing up through all of it, the arrest, the trials, the long walk to this hill, still here. Still bearing witness. Love does that. It stays even when there is nothing left to do but stay. Jesus sees them in the middle of his own dying. He doesn't stop loving them. Woman, he says to his mother, here is your son, pointing to his beloved disciple, and here is your mother. Even now from the cross, he's still making a way for people to belong to one another, still building a community of love that will withstand his death. Then, I am thirsty. The psalmist tells us, my mouth is dried up like a potsherd. My tongue sticks to the roof of my mouth. It is the only moment in John's passion where the body speaks its need plainly. This man who has gone calmly forward, who has known everything, who has been surprised by nothing, is thirsty. He is a body after all, a body reaching the limits of his incarnation, flesh and bone and blood and thirst dry. Failing. They lift a sponge of wine to his lips and he receives it. And then Jesus says, it is finished. Tetelestai, completed, accomplished, brought to its end, not defeat, not relief, not a cry for help finally answered. Something else entirely. The whole psalm prayed. The whole cup emptied. Nothing refused. Nothing avoided. All the way to the end. He didn't survive it. He finished it. And he bowed his head and gave up his spirit. His body anointed, wrapped in linen, laid in a garden tomb. Today, the story is finished. It ends here. Saturday sits in confusion and grief and silence at the sealed tomb, at the unknown, the not